It was a pre-Great Recession thing. The term McMansion seems to have faded from general use now. It was a reference to new homes built for families of two or three that had more than 2,000 square feet of space. And while McMansions, or at least the term, has faded, the opposite end of the spectrum seems to still have a devoted following. And that would be tiny homes, houses small enough to be built upon a flatbed trailer. We've talked about them before, and we pick up the discussion once again with two people very much involved in the creation of tiny homes. Patricia Foreman is a builder and the author of a book called A Tiny Home to Call Your Own, and Todd Miller is an architect and the owner of Oregon Cottage Company in Eugene. Welcome, Patricia.
Well, thank you so very much. It's an honor to be on your show.
Thank you. Todd, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you. It's a joy to be here.
So, Patricia, is it true that yours was the first tiny house construction company in the country?
Well, this was back in the the early 2000s, and yeah, as far as we know, we were getting calls all across the country, and there were contractors that were just building them, you know, individually under contract, but we had actually set up a little construction operation to do them, build them in our big barn is what it was. But unfortunately, back at that time, and probably still, the zoning and the financing put us out of business. I mean, people would come saying it's the answer to all my problems. I mean, can you? And then they'd go and they'd find they couldn't put it on the land they thought they could, or they couldn't get financing, and it was pretty dire.
All right, I want to pick up on the obstacles there, but first I want to ask Todd about his particular attraction to making tiny homes and what got you into the business.
Yes. I did a lot of natural building and alternative housing since the late 90s. Did a lot of cob, straw bale, and I still do that for clients. And part of it is just finding the need for affordable housing. I just found across the country and with my clients' needs that it just made a lot of sense to go down the tiny house model. And I started building in 2008, so it was pretty early as well. I didn't know, Patricia, that you were even earlier than me. It was definitely...
Well, we were small, Todd. We were really small.
And we are too. And I wanted to keep it that way. There are a lot of companies that are now, even locally here in Eugene and throughout Oregon, that are building 5 to 10 to 15 a month. I decided to stay small and decide to make it kind of a homespun industry. And like you, Patricia, I was kind of daunted by some of the regulations. But back then, it was a lot easier than it is now. The state of Oregon has changed some of the policies back in 2016, and we might be able to get into that in a little later.
All right. Yeah, I definitely want to get into some of the obstacles here, but let's talk about some more personal circumstances here. Patricia, you live in a tiny home. Is that true?
Well, I live in a small home or a small space. It's interesting because there are so many people wanting to downsize on both sides of the generation. So I currently live in about 750 square feet, and that's downsizing from a pretty large house. And I'm finding it's just enough for my lifestyle right now and what I want to do with my life. And that includes a hound dog and a Maine Coon cat and a stray cat and about 23 chickens, whether sure in the yard.
Chickens outside, yes. I'm glad.
Chickens outside. So yeah, it's this whole thing of how big is big and how small is small. I was thinking about that this morning in that it's what I would advocate is what's appropriate for your lifestyle. And for some people, they're downsizing from 6,000 square feet to 2,000 square feet, and that might be small to them. And I think if we can just get more towards houses that actually fit the lifestyles of the greater population, almost regardless of the size, but I'm certainly bent towards the smaller, living smaller, because I agree with Todd, what you wrote. And I, by the way, you're wonderful live every day that I saw on your website. You know, I think housing is part of the solution, and we all have to really assess, I mean, how much is enough, you know, not only with our living and stuff, but with our lifestyles and what we really want to do. So,
Todd, what kind of space do you live in? You have lived in small places, but not at the moment, is that right?
Right now, yes, I live with my partner and my daughter, and we live in 900 square feet, which we're converting, actually. We're making it smaller pulling a permit here in the city of Eugene. We're going to be making it, reducing the size of it down to 800 square feet to make it into an ADU. So that's an accessory dwelling unit.
Mm-hmm. So like a mother-in-law apartment or you know, one of the garage converted into a house, that sort of thing?
Exactly. And there's a lot of new state of Oregon has changed and made it more accommodating for accessory dwelling units. So not only to make things more available because of the housing needs that are here in the state.
So let's talk about the lifestyles primarily, but economically, can you address what the costs are of living in a place like this? Patricia first.
Oh, sure. I mean, it sort of goes across the board between the costs and maintenance and upkeep and free time or not. There was a I was on another call when a mother that had three kids called in from Canada. And she really nailed it, I thought. She said, you know, all my life is just keeping house and cleaning and cooking and taking care of the yard. He goes, is my life nothing more than housekeeping? It's literally just draining me. And I think that's what a lot of people feel is are we a slave to our mortgage and the upkeep and all the repairs that have to keep continually going? When you live in a smaller house, all those shrink down to a smaller, in my opinion, more manageable size.
Todd, similar situation you see?
Yeah, I do. My clientele, there's definitely people that, majority of them are single women over 60 looking to change their life in a sense that take control of their life a little bit more and reduce their expenses. I've seen rental expenses as far as upkeeping of the utilities for our tiny houses as low as $15, $25, $30 roughly a month, and that's it, even less than that per month for utilities. But to get into a cottage, to a tiny house, it's becoming more expensive for us because of the regulations, because of the licensing, and we're looking at averaging $65,000 roughly. It could vary depending upon the size and the style that people want to.
Okay, you've teed up the next segment for us pretty well. We definitely need to talk about some of the economic and zoning challenges of tiny homes. Patricia Foreman and Todd Miller are guests on the Jefferson Exchange. Back in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Discussion topic for this hour, tiny homes, the care and feeding and building and maintenance and, oh yeah, zoning and financing. That's what we'll get into in just a moment. Two guests join us. We have with us Patricia Foreman, who has been involved in tiny house construction over the years and just put out a second edition of the book called A Tiny Home to Call Your Own, Living Well in Just Right Houses. We also have with us Todd Miller, who's an architect and the owner of Oregon Cottage Company in Eugene, and you are welcome to join our conversation. Questions, comments, thoughts about tiny homes, perhaps experiences if you live in one yourself. We would love to hear from you at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you broached the subject first, Patricia, and Todd chimed in quickly about some of the issues with zoning and financing. Let's talk about some of the things that have really kind of hamstrung people in their efforts to locate tiny homes over the years.
Well, I think those issues that you just mentioned, they're also linked to a perception that small is poor. And not only that, but small, being small is also cheap. And that's not necessarily the case at all. And that's a perception I think we need to overcome, and I think is starting to overcome. And the cottages we built, and I'm sure the cottages that you build, Todd, they're craftsman cottages, tiny houses, and we had a regular size house construction too that we specialized in hypoallergenic and natural materials, renewable materials. But the zoning was one of the worst things because if you wanted to put a tiny house on your lot, it would be taxed as a duplex. And in many cases, you'd have to actually physically attach it to your house. If you put a tiny house on a lot that was by itself, depending on what the zoning was, then you'd have a really small house on maybe a two to 10 acre lot. In town, it was, of course, less, but it put the price of the house up quite a bit. And then the other thing was we need to really change the zoning and the city codes. What we found, too, I'm going to just switch just a slight little bit, but people were having a lot of problem finding builders. Todd, you probably get a lot of this, where builders don't like to build small houses because there's not that much profit in them. You know, the cost per square foot drops dramatically when you put on that bonus room or the big spaces. The expensive parts to build are the kitchen and the bathroom. And the small and tiny houses, it's quite a bit kitchen and bathroom, and then your living space. So then the other obstacle was that realtors really don't like them because their commissions aren't as high. On the upscale side, if I can just mention this, that we found that the cottages and the small houses have a much better appreciation rate generally than the larger houses because you've got a larger financial base that can afford them.
Interesting.
Have you found that, Todd?
Yeah, we have. We've found the same thing. We've also found that the building costs have gone up for us. The square footage costs have gone up, and part of that's because of some state regulations that we had to encounter back in 2016. We also found that, like you, is that a lot of our clients were clients actually transitioning, and they did have cash enough, and they've saved enough to afford a tiny house like the ones that we built. They're highly crafted. So the price per square footage is more expensive than a standard home, but you're getting a complete home when you're done. As well, with the tiny house on wheels, it's drastically different than just a tiny house or an addition or an ADU, because there's no foundation to it. They come into a whole different set of guidelines and regulations. So it's hard to compare the two beasts because one is regulated by your local jurisdiction. The other one is more regulated by either the state who certifies RVs. So it's definitely hard to compare the two.
You know, Patricia made reference to the fact that people see small as equivalent to poor or cheap. And I wonder if you hear a fair amount of that in the Eugene area, Todd, where you are, because you have Opportunity Village Eugene, which is a bunch of smaller structures as well. So, I mean, are people starting to think that tiny house also equals homeless? Or just barely not homeless?
Not from what I understand. I'm from a pretty open and liberal community here where I think people understand that due to the economy, due to standard of living, this has been going on for 60, 70 years, where no longer, like in the 50s, you could have a single income afford and a single breadwinner in a household, and you could live a comfortable lifestyle. Now that's not the case anymore, and that's due to inflation. This is a bigger issue in the housing sector across the United States. So people are downsizing all around. Yes, there are those McMansions, there's these larger structures. But what I've seen since the late 90s is there's a growing awareness and growing desire to downsize, to lessen the consumer aspect of your day-to-day living.
We're talking about tiny homes with Todd Miller, who is an architect and the owner of Oregon Cottage Company in Eugene. We also have with us from Indiana, Patricia Foreman, who has put out another edition of her book, A Tiny Home to Call Your Own, Living Well in Just Right Houses. Patricia, I want to come back to Todd, certainly, and ask about his references to Oregon legislation, but has there been much in the way of statewide legislation in Indiana, for example, that makes it a little easier to build houses, tiny homes?
That's a really good question, and not that I've observed. Of course, I've been out of the tiny house construction part of it for quite a while now. In Virginia, where we had our construction company, there was just a lot of snob zoning that was there. Here in Indiana, what they're finding, I just had this discussion last night with a realtor, is that there's a lot of houses that have been torn down in Richmond, Indiana, that have just gone derelict, and there are these lots, over 100 lots, that are just empty. And I said, well, why don't you put a tiny house on them or a small house, and just to help our housing situation here. And I think as we head down the road, quite frankly, that housing, the demographics are hitting it from both ends. Todd, you mentioned about the senior people have elder women, especially women, they have saved enough so they can pay cash. But we're also seeing the millennials. They're waiting longer to even marry if have kids, and have a kids, if at all. And they're renting rather than buying. So we've got the younger generation not necessarily wanting to own houses and the older generation wanting to have smaller houses. And so this standard three-bedroom, two-bath, two-car garage house that everyone seems to think is the American dream just does not fit the demographics or the finances or the lifestyles now of the major segment of our population. You know, in 1960s, it was different. We had about 72% of all the adults were married. I mean, by far, everyone was married. This is what you did. But then fast forward to 2016, the estimates say that there's about 45% of all adults over 18 are single, and that's about 110 million U.S. citizens. And in 2017, it's even more. So the line is so clear that the housing no longer really fits what the social economic choices are of our population on both sides.
So society changing, obviously politics eventually catches up, we hope. But Todd, you've made a couple references now to changes in Oregon in 2016. Is that when it became easier to put into accessory dwelling units under state legislation?
No, actually, that was under state legislation. It came in only last year for that.
Mm-hmm.
What I was referring to was the Oregon Department of Consumer and Business Services underneath the Oregon Building Code Division, where they did a year-long research and study into tiny houses because they were finding that there was more applications that they were receiving for tiny house. This is on wheels. They didn't even recognize what a tiny house was. And they sent out a letter to all the builders here in the state of Oregon requesting information about their company and about the clients that they had and how these clients were living in the tiny houses. They were finding, what they found after 1 year was that the majority of the people that were in these tiny houses were actually living in them full time. So they didn't want to be associated with a situation where they're certifying homes or tiny homes as RVs and people were living in them full time when they're not supposed to be living in them full time. That's a recreational vehicle.
Uh-huh.
So they got out of that business and made it very clear and changed the Oregon revised statutes to reflect that.
So that people could live? I'm trying to figure out what the result is then.
Yeah, the result is that the builders couldn't build and get certified as a recreational vehicle in the state of Oregon. Now they could still get certified as RVIA, Recreational Vehicle Industry Association, but they would, and the state would not recognize them as they would need to actually license or have a business license out of the state in order to build tiny houses in the state of Oregon. Basically, this was tiny house on wheels. The RV industry is a whole different situation. So they basically cracked down on the builders that were doing tiny houses. And now it's kind of settled, and it put a lot of people into high gear to be certified RVIA.
Okay, so it's
we had to go that route builders. Too.
Did you? Okay, RVs. All right, a lot of RV stuff going on with the tiny houses.
Well, and also
to clarify, there are three states in the country that actually the state regulates the RV industry. Most states go through RVIA as mm-hmm. a third party. Since the state of Oregon, it's in the revised statutes that they regulate the RV industry. they're required to certify them. And that's one reason why they did a study about who's building the tiny houses. And since they were regulating them, and they don't recognize our VIA here in the state, the people that build them here, they will allow RVs to come in the state that are RVIA, but they won't allow RVIA, a third party, they won't recognize that third party if you're building them here. You have to go through their process, and they won't recognize the tiny houses. So it's kind of a quagmire here. The three states are Oregon, Washington, and Nebraska. They're the only three states in the country that do that. Indiana recognizes RVIA as a third party, I would assume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have a big RV. But the other problem with that we found, Todd, is that financing. If it's only an RV, that it comes under a much shorter finance, like a trailer, like five-year financing generally, or maybe just a little bit longer. So people were having trouble even with that, getting financing for them.
Wow, all kinds of obstacles here. We're talking about the construction of tiny homes with Patricia Foreman, who is the author of A Tiny Home to Call Your Own. Todd Miller is the owner of Oregon Cottage Company in Eugene. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Todd, you're going to hear some clicks. I have to do some voodoo with the phone lines to keep you on and not knock you off when I take other calls. But we're still here. John and Grants Pass is on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. What about some of the problems that tiny homes might have to handle? For instance, how are you going to have a family over for the weekend? You know, like I've got two kids, four grandkids, that's eight of us. And you can't go, let's say it's winter or you live in Minnesota, you're not going to go outside. So where are some of the other, I mean, there must be a lot of problems, but go ahead.
Just trying to socialize and stuff. Okay, good question. Thanks for that, John.
Can I take a punt at that?
Yeah, please, Patricia.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we found is to build a large deck and literally on a smaller house and tiny house, it helped bring the outdoors in, but also it became part of an extended living room because you could have the barbecue out there. We usually put built-in seats, benches as well. And sometimes the deck could have as big a floor plan as a 4 foot square footage as the house would. And that really seemed to make things a lot bigger. We actually built one house for a lady that was tired of having her family over. She said they come over, they expect her to cook for her, to clean for her, they stay way too long. And so we built a one bedroom, I think it was a 650 square foot house for her. And she did it specifically because she did not want so many visitors to come and stay with her so long. But
Didn't have to have that conversation.
That's the flip side of the story there.
Right.
And of course, you've got tents. I mean, you know, you got people. There are motel rooms by, but Airbnbs are by for extra bedrooms, that sort of thing. So there is an outlet for extended family gatherings.
Okay, let's take another call here. More noise on your end of the line, Todd. Let's go to John and Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi. I was wondering, from an environmental impact, the smaller house has more outside walls, as opposed to like an apartment complex or a row house. So is the heating and maybe cooling costs bigger? Could we just not make tiny houses touching each other for environmental reasons? I know zoning may be difficult.
But okay, interesting questions about energy efficiency. Thanks for that, John. Appreciate it. Todd, want to take that?
Yeah. As far as energy efficiency, we're finding that even though some of the structures, what we build is out of a 2x4 stick frame, and we insulate them with R13. It's an EcoBat insulation from aldehyde free. But we're finding because they're so small, those R values of R13 don't meet the standard building code for a residence that would be with a complete foundation. But because they're so small and efficient, just the body heat of the individuals in them keep them warmer than as if it was a larger space. So the efficiency is compounded considerably when you have a small space. You cook a meal and it warms the whole space up a few degrees. We're finding that they're quite efficient It makes the individual very conscientious about the things that they have, how they operate in a space that is so small, and they think twice about how they function in their home space.
Todd, do you have a bunch of off-the-shelf sorts of designs, like you build the Heritage or the Classic or whatever, or all these custom built?
Yeah, we do. On our website, we have a standard set of cottages that we draw from, standard set of designs. With that said, every one of our cottages have been customized. Normally, people would take one of our designs or combine it with another one or an option that they see from another website or another idea that they have. Our clients, because they're so small, we recognize that it needs to be fitted like a glove for the individual. Mm-hmm. So every one of ours we customize, but they're based on a standard model, standard level of craftsmanship.
Okay, so people get their own little features on it. That's good to know. We'll pick the conversation up on tiny homes on the other side of a break. Patricia Foreman wrote A Tiny Home to Call Your Own, now in a second edition. Todd Miller is architect and owner of the Oregon Cottage Company in Eugene. We'll come back and talk more about tiny homes and take more phone calls and emails from you when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. Familiar with them. Patricia Foreman had one of the first tiny house construction companies in the country, if not the first. She lives in Indiana now in a not tiny, but not very large home either, and is the author of now a second edition of a book called A Tiny Home to Call Your Own, Living Well in Just Right Houses. Todd Miller is in Oregon. He's the architect and owner of Oregon Cottage Company in Eugene, and you can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We were talking about some of the logistical and technical concerns about tiny houses. Patricia, I want to pick up the part of the book where you talk about stuffology.
Yes, stuffology. Can I make one comment on what we've talked about earlier?
Sure.
In the show? What we found when we were building tiny houses, and Todd, you might have found that as well, but that people would want us to build something that could be inhabited. And our suggestion was, one, we call it anything but a house. Just call it a garden shed or a writer's cottage or a nook or whatever. Just don't call it a house. And if you put it on skids, that's even better to get it sort of legal or semi-legal or stay under the radar, whatever the intent was. So I just wanted to add that in. We did do a couple of projects like that.
But this was to get around to calling it a house, because then you end up with all the building code issues and all the other stuff.
Then you can't build it.
Right.
I mean, that was it. And the other thing is accessory buildings. I mean, some of them they just called offices, and especially a couple that we built on trailers where they could park it in the backyard or driveway, and they didn't have to do an hour and a half commute every day. There's a case study on that in the tiny house book. So just call it anything but a house, and that gets you a long way down the road. There are she sheds, and he caves.
Yeah, right. Man caves and she sheds, yeah.
Yeah.
So
stuff. We got to deal with your stuff. You just no way around it.
Yeah, the stuffology part, that's interesting, though, because when you're moving into these things as a regular place to live, though, you're going to end up really, really downsizing your life.
Mm-hmm. Well, downsizing just about all the physical stuff, and I think we're evolving, really, Jeffrey. I think we're coming up to where we're getting over the affluenza, where right after World War II, all the appliances and all the there's actually a documentary called Affluenza that's worth watching.
Right.
And I hope we're getting to a place where, more cheap stuff isn't going to give you a quality life, and we're realizing more and more that the stuff has to serve us. It's not I've never seen, for example, on anybody's tombstone, ever, where it said this person had a really big house, full of stuff, always clean. No one's life has really been about that, has it? So I'm still dealing with my stuff. I got to be honest. I've downsized from seven different entities into 750 square feet or so that I'm living in. And the thing about living in a small house, if you're something's out of place, the clutter. You have a couple of books on the floor or laundry on it, all of a sudden the whole place looks messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that it's a nice discipline for me to really deal with my stuff. And I'm continuing to deal with it creatively.
Good. Let's talk about how you construct the homes, though. Todd, I want to get into furniture versus built-ins. Is it better to build some structures in and so not require a lot of furniture to be brought into the structure?
We found that it's a combination of the individual having their own furniture and designing around that furniture. So a lot of our clients come with a selected list of the furniture that they have, and so we design the structure around that furniture that they choose to bring in. There's also the whole aspect of being able to even fit it through the front door. When you're considering an opening that's only 24 inches wide, you really reevaluate the kind of furniture that you bring in to your space. It usually is a lighter, either you can disassemble it. And there's a lot of spin-off industries that have been created because of the tiny house movement, which is exciting. The adaptivity of all the furniture to convert to stacking functions. A chair becomes a desk. A bed becomes an office space. Things like that, which is exciting to see in the design world.
Couple of questions for you. This one from email from Joy and Talent wants to know, how do tiny homes pass building code inspections if there's only one door? Doesn't that violate fire safety requirements?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I do want to add something, if I can, is that being an architect in the state, having the fire and life safety issues is paramount to what I do. And individuals who choose to live in a tiny house that is an RV is not permitted by the state because they don't have the exiting provisions for a full-time residence. The clients that we work with can choose to live in one or not. And that's the reason why the state of Oregon has chosen to not certify RVs that are built on wheels as a full-time residence, because they're not. So, but the state also recognizes smaller homes that are built on a foundation, a concrete or alternative foundation, and they are recognizing the need for smaller homes. So there was a Senate bill that passed as far as ADUs to help accommodate that, and that was last year. So there definitely is a housing need, and there's a safety path to go down that route. So RVs do have a requirement to have an extra egress out of the structure, and usually it's a window that meets the RV guidelines. But that's the RV guidelines. That's not for full-time residents. So for clarity on that, you're not supposed to be living in an RV full-time. There are some trailer parks that allow that, but that is under another auspice.
So are you saying that from what I've been hearing over the course of this hour, it sounds like in Oregon, tiny homes are still sort of stuck between permanent structure and RV and not really getting a lot of respect from either set of rules?
I think that the state wants there to be the guidelines for fire and life safety of the individuals living in them. And a lot of people do go, as Patricia stated, under the radar because they don't have as many options. And this is a very viable option for them to live in a tiny house on wheels. They do have a path to go down for a normal tiny house that it may be 800 square feet. But a lot of people are choosing to want even smaller homes, in which you can do based upon the International Residential Code. And there is that path to go down, which requires two exits, exiting out of windows, but you have to meet those guidelines. And you can go well below 800 square feet. You could go to 300 square feet, but there are minimal guidelines for room and room occupancy, as well as spatial guidelines for minimum room sizes that you need to adhere to.
Now, Patricia, did you say you got out of the business? You're not building anymore because of the ways in which regulations were hamstringing what you could do?
Yes, that's right. Literally, our customers would come, and when they went to get permits, or we went to get permits, or did the zoning, they found there were so many obstacles that it just disappeared.
Let us take another phone call. We have Carter in Wolf Creek on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Patricia Foreman and Todd Miller. Carter, you there? Oops, I didn't push the right button. Carter, you there?
Yes, I didn't hear the tone, so yeah, you can hear me now.
Yes.
I have been up here on this property since 1991, and I have been living in an interior dimension of 11 by 27, and lots of windows in this cabin. And you already covered about when you live in a small space, it, in a very positive, healthy way, tends to limit your accumulations or your possessions. And that's helpful to me. Another thing that I very much enjoy about this cabin is I only have to take from any point interiorly, if just a few steps, like about no more than 10 steps at all, to be right outdoors. Right out in the open, and I very much enjoy being in a cabin, and then if I want to go outdoors, I can be outdoors in just a matter of seconds. So that's why I called.
All right. Thanks so much for that, Carter. Appreciate that. Patricia, that sounds like it resonates with you.
Oh, it does so much, because there's something to me that's magical about living in a smaller space, and I think it appeals to a lot of people, and he just so beautifully expressed that. The senses kind of expands. I set my hearing at a different level, my peripheral vision's at a different level. Then when the wind blows outside, I take notice of it. It's like I'm more connected to what's going on in my whole environment. And magical things kind of tend to happen because you're noticing. And I think, from my perspective, our culture really doesn't have a vocabulary or the words or even to describe what it's like to live in a small house. Cozy and small is not it. It's much more than that. And there's also a sense of enough. And that's such a rich, deep sense in me. Enough and appreciation for what I have. And I'm happy with that. I'm satisfied with that.
Todd, you have actually upsized a bit over the years. You're 900 square feet you said you're living in now?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is still not an abundance of room if you got, what, three people in the house?
Yes, we do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the 300 square feet per person, and less than that if you take out the bathroom and the kitchen. What's that?
Only one door in the house, though. So we have very limited privacy, and that's fine for us. We feel like that we know each other quite well in that smaller space, and we're... like Patricia said, I really want to add that, and Carter mentioned, the extension of the interior space to the outdoors. Every wall is a demising wall, an exterior wall. Most of them are. And that's a beautiful thing, because every wall that you look at, you can have a window that looks out, and your connection to nature, connection to the environment and to the your land that you live on is quite important. I know to me and to a lot of people that I talk to, that's quite important to them.
So I want to get into, we mentioned only briefly homelessness. We only have about 2 minutes left here. And you, in the book, Patricia, talk about Gandhi calling poverty the worst form of violence. You think that homelessness is the worst form of poverty. You write not just about the unhoused, but also the inappropriately housed. What does that mean?
That is so rich and broad a subject. I'm going to start with the poverty part, that homelessness is the worst form of poverty, and poverty. Gandhi said that violence is the poverty is the worst form of violence. Our thing to be homeless and not to have anything or be anybody to nobody, kind of thing, is it's really the lowest of the lowest places that a human can be. I think there is a place in our culture for these cottage communities, and there's a beautiful example down in Austin, Texas. It's called Community First, where they have homeless people that are mainly the residents there. They had a contest for architectural design to build these tiny houses, and then they had builders donate projects. It's on a 27-acre, and they have gardens, and it's not just a freebie. They pay rent, and they work in the gardens, and they have outside jobs. So if we can take the pressure off of just the fear of homelessness, I think that's a big deal. And with respect to the appropriate housing, I know if someone's not secure at home or if they're facing violence, all this is coming out now about domestic violence, and especially with women. I mean, it's hard to be a fully potential human being, isn't it, if we're living in fear or in inappropriate places. I mean, it seems like our house and our habitat is such an extension of ourselves.
Truly, okay.
And I probably didn't articulate that quite as well as I'm feeling it, but I think it's so critically important, and I think we need to really deal with how much is enough and community, bring community back into so many things.
The ongoing issue of how much is enough for you, and what do we do about that as a society in addition to what we want for ourselves as individuals. Certainly discussed in Patricia Foreman's book, A Tiny Home to Call Your Own, now in a second edition. Todd Miller is architect and owner of Oregon Cottage Company. And Eugene, thank you both for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you,
it's been an honor.